Welcome to the Packet Pushers Podcast, a technical program about data networking published several times per month. We discuss topics like TCP/IP, routers, switches, data centers, and so on. I am Ethan Banks. I'm a CCIE, and today the topic is Open EIGRP. Now, EIGRP is a routing protocol very popular in Cisco networks, but has received criticism over the years because it is closed, proprietary, and unique to Cisco. If you want to use EIGRP, you've got to get it licensed. That was the story for many years anyway. Now, within recent days, Cisco has done an open EIGRP implementation, and we wanted to talk about that in more detail. The announcement that Cisco's made, what's really going on with the IETF as in regards to open EIGRP. And so I got a couple of guys on who know a lot about it. One is Russ White. Now, Russ has been on the show before, written an awful lot of books, is heavily involved in the IETF, and is just a network man about town. Russ, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Ethan, for having me on. And EIGRP is a fascinating topic.
Yeah, well, and you've been involved in it for quite a long time, I mean, through development and so on.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it's the way I met Radio Perlman, believe it or not. I was sitting in a bar in Washington, D.C. at an ITF. I was drinking my little Coke or whatever it was, and Radio walks up to me and says, "I heard you know something about EIGRP."
And, okay.
There you go.
Also joining us today is Don Savage from Cisco. Now, Don, I came across your name actually seeing a YouTube with you and another gentleman talking a bit about Open EIGRP, and I think I reached out to you on LinkedIn, and then Russ said, "Oh, I know Donnie. Let me get him on the show." And why don't you tell us what your role is at Cisco and what you know about Open EIGRP?
How are you doing, Ethan? Yeah, I'm Donnie Savage. I've joined Cisco in 95. I was in the token ring group at the time. Later, about 96, transitioned over to the IP routing team. They gave me this little protocol called EIGRP. I joked that when they first handed it to me, I really didn't even know how to spell EIGRP. All right. But from that point, I've been involved in EIGRP throughout my career at various stages. I've been the feature implementer. I've been the manager, the tech lead, a number of things. So that's kind of my history at Cisco and my history with EIGRP.
Very good. And my background with EIGRP is it's actually the protocol I've used even more than OSPF, I think, to do interior gateway routing. So I actually dealt with a couple of networks where EIGRP was really large, spread out over a few thousand devices. So, you know, those folks that that are skeptical of it and don't like it for this reason or that reason, you can actually do an awful lot with EIGRP and make it a stable and very large routed network if you like. Now, EIGRP for years and years, again, as I said in the intro, was criticized because it was really Cisco only. You only run EIGRP if you're a Cisco only shop. Other than that, you're probably going to run OSPF. But here we are in 2012, 2013, and Cisco has taken the step of moving towards an open implementation of EIGRP, or at least opening it up to the community at large. And Donnie, maybe you want to tackle this one. Why did Cisco take this step?
So yeah, a little bit of history, right? If you go back to when EIGRP was originally invented, which would have been around the 93, 94 timeframe, I wasn't at Cisco during that time, but one of the stories that I remember being told is Cisco actually approached the ATF about opening EIGRP. At that time, what I was told was the IETF basically responded with, "We have enough routing protocols, not interested," right? So Cisco kind of went off and took EIGRP and kind of did our own thing. Fast forward up to, you know, my career with EIGRP and into the 2000 timeframe, we kind of felt, or the developers, right, like myself and Russ and some of the other people that were close to it, kind of felt like it was time for us to kind of open it beyond just simply being Cisco. So we revisited the idea around 2000. Marketing and management really didn't feel like the timing was right. I'm back as a TME now, so part of one of the things I did is I went back to the marketing staff and said, "Hey, we need to revisit this idea." And the market has changed, right? I mean, if you look at where we were in 93, even in 2000 and going forward, the market is very different, right? EIGRP is one of a number of protocols out there. We are now seeing wholesale deployment of IPv6. We see customers are now reevaluating what solution should they use. We've actually seen some technologies, some of the energy type technologies that have came and said, we would love to use EIGRP. It fits really well for the deployment model we have. It's not open. We're going to go with OSPF, or ultimately they went off and invented their own thing, right? So I think part of the drive has been to look and say, what are the factors in the network that deal with routing, and how are customers making decisions? And we found that a lot of times customers were making technical decisions based on non-technical criteria. For example, EIGRP is great, perfect, already trained, already understand it, not open. I've got a mandate here that says I can only use open solutions. So I think Cisco's position, or at least I know personally my position, is, you know, let's let technology dictate technical decisions, and let's take this stuff about standard versus non-standard off the table.
All too common of a story when you make a decision in networking, though, is exactly that. Making a decision for non-technical reasons. There's budgetary constraints. There's the matter of compatibility. And certainly that drum has been beat really loud. OSPF will run on anything. Therefore, if I want to play it safe, I'm going to use OSPF. Oh, and by the way, it's a wonderful protocol anyway, so it's not like it's a big problem. I'm just going to go down that road.
As a matter of fact, you know, when I talked to the people at the IETF, last IETF, which we were just at, now the reaction to opening EIGRP is, we don't even know how EIGRP works. We need to sit down and actually figure out what it is and how it works. You know, so it's been so many years since people have encountered EIGRP at a technical level in the IETF and other standards bodies that they don't even really understand the protocol. You know, there's this whole myth about it being a hybrid of link state and distance vector. It's not. It's distance vector. But anyway, that's the kind of thing you get into sometimes where, again, making decisions not on technical ground, there's actually almost becoming a lack of people who understand it really well.
Yeah, the other thing, I remember seeing one of the packet pusher episodes that were talking about routing and some of the advances, right? And one of the things discussed in the episode was how EIGRP actually attempts to use more than simply hop-based or fixed cost-based to make routing solutions, right? And part of, you know, going forward, it would be interesting to see how the industry actually picks up EIGRP and maybe tries to do some research around these criteria that are becoming more important in routing, right? As customers begin to look at more applications level concerns instead of simply pushing packets around the network.
I think practically speaking, most EIGRP implementations go with the defaults where bandwidth and delay are the only attributes of the route that are considered as the forwarding path is calculated. But I think you're alluding to the fact that there are other things, other metrics that could be brought into a particular EIGRP routing domain.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, if you look at our last generation of packets, which I was one of the authors that created the packet formats, if you go in and you look at the draft we released, there's this new concept within EIGRP called extended metrics, right? And these are things that you can carry around. We predefine a couple of them, quiescent energy and energy, that you could actually use EIGRP to monitor energy consumption along a path, right? Now, are we doing that today? Not right now, but we were thinking ahead with where we could take EIGRP in the future and how it might evolve into a solution that's just better than, oh, I'm two hops away or I'm five hops away.
Just reflecting back on my own work with EIGRP and then looking at some of the other options that are there built in, such as now I've got to go back and think through all the options of the metrics that are built into the standard EIGRP we know and love. But you know, for example, link utilization. Well, you can't get two EIGRP routers to neighbor and exchange routes unless everyone's K values are the same. Well, that impacts effectively then the whole EIGRP domain. And so it becomes very difficult to actually implement anything other than the defaults of bandwidth and delay to make that forwarding decision. So with the extensions that you're talking about, would it get easier to roll those things into a production EIGRP network?
Yeah. See, the problem with EIGRP and the way the original K values were constructed is, depending on which Ks you had invoked, right, you could actually wind up with metrics that were better or worse. Now, if you devise metrics that are worse, who cares, right? You won't loop. You may not pick the path you want, but you're not going to build a loop. But if you set your Ks on one router versus another, where one router generates a smaller composite metric value versus another router, you could actually wind up with loops. And so the original authors solved that problem by saying, we all agree on what a composite metric means, or we all don't talk. With the newer extensions, we kind of revisited that and said, well, you know what? We don't want to ever make the metric better. So what we're going to do is we're going to make it always worse. And so now you would be able to fold in some of these extended metrics and actually allow yourself to evolve this stuff into your network, understanding that a path which doesn't support it, you know, it might not be the choice that you wanted, but at least you're not going to loop within your network. That's one thing that you can say about EIGRP that you can't necessarily say about, forgive me, OSPF or ISIS, right? When you get into things like, you know, IPFRR and stuff, we don't have micro loops in EIGRP, right? That's one of the things that, you know, I've had a number of philosophical discussions with my peers over changes that we could make to EIGRP to make it converge faster or make it have feasible successors in different situations that it doesn't currently have, but it would have generated micro loops. And so we've always been very adamant, almost religious about the fact that EIGRP doesn't loop.
Although I would say, I'll add to that, Donnie, that there are extensions to EIGRP that we've talked about in the past that would allow, much like IPFRR technologies and OSPF and ISIS, but without the micro loops.
Yeah, EIGRP has IPFRR, right? What we don't have is the remote stuff, right? We can't do multi-hop fast rerouting. We can only do single
today.
Hop. I mean, today. Yeah. There are some technologies and some ideas that have been looked at that would allow EIGRP to do multi-hop routing computations instead of single-hop computations. We've not implemented those up to this point, largely because we haven't had the customer demand.
Russ, as you've talked with folks at the IETF about EIGRP, you mentioned earlier that they're trying to wrap their brains back around just how the protocol works, what it does, what it presents that's unique from other IGPs that are out there. What's the reaction been? You just came back from an IETF meeting. Was there much of a discussion about open EIGRP?
Well, there was some discussion about the process and method, you know, Cisco's using the informational path rather than a working group, and some people were a little bit confused by that at first. We had some discussions around that. There was, which I don't think is a bad path. I just think, you know, it's a path within the IETF, and it's perfectly valid. There was some discussion about, okay, what would this give us that OSPF wouldn't? And I think the biggest area that we approached in my discussions with other people over that are areas like HomeNet and MANA, Mobile Ad Hoc Networks, and Energy Aware Control Plane. And even there was some discussion around data center design and the advantages of a distance vector protocol in large leaf and node networks, cloth network designs, things like that, over standard link state protocols. As you may know, some data centers actually use BGP as their IGP, specifically to get around the flooding issues that you deal with in a link state protocol like OSPF or ISIS. So EIGRP as an open protocol would allow us to have an alternative to that model.
As I listen to this conversation, I'm hearing, I mean, you guys at the IETF are talking at a very technical level about advantages and disadvantages of the protocol, but I'm wondering, with such a huge established base of BGP in production, OSPF in production, especially those two, of course, my brain's coming from more of an enterprise perspective than service provider, but do you really think EIGRP can get a foothold here and that there's enough of a potential gain that EIGRP is likely to get picked up by folks?
So I think the answer is yes, right? I mean, I hear a lot of people talk about OSPF dominance in the IGP space, and honestly, the numbers that I've seen doesn't bear that out, right? So if you look at that, then you go back and you say, well, what else is being used? Well, there's RIP, ISIS, OSPF, and in some cases, as Russ said, BGP. So EDGRP by itself at least matches all of the other protocols in percentage deployment. And one could argue that it actually, you know, would then exceed the OSPF deployments considerably if you assume that the others have, you know, a mix of their own. So I think that EDGRP has a strong presence in the enterprise space. We can argue whether it's dominant or not. I don't think that's really all that important. Beyond saying, yeah, it has a huge presence. As we see people begin to deploy IPv6, for example, we know that EDGRP fits well in IPv6, and it'll be interesting to see as these greenfield adoptions go how EDGRP plays when you're not considered business operational impact of changing protocols versus coming out with something brand new. So long-winded way of saying, you know, I don't think you see an OSPF dominance. The information I've seen doesn't seem to back that up. And yes, I think there is a heavy presence of EDGRP within the customer and within enterprise specifically. And so I think EDGRP does have a place going forward. And I think with some of the flexibility it brings to the table and with more companies shipping EDGRP, I think you're going to see that come out.
And so I'll even add to that. I think it's more of a mindshare issue than it is an actual boots on the ground issue.
Agree.
That's kind of my take.
Well, I would argue that the crowd that is very much preaching the OSPF gospel makes the point, and a good one, that, hey, I have more than just routers that need to exchange routes. I'm also talking to firewalls. I'm also talking to other things running a daemon, and I can't run EIGRP in those things. Therefore, I've been running OSPF in my network. So I think, you know, from that standpoint, it's pretty easy to make the case for OSPF dominance because of vendor interoperability and the fact that it's been it's mature, it's been stable, and people are very comfortable deploying it now. So there's been a lot of years where folks have had the opportunity, both from a vendor side, to implement OSPF in their devices, and then also to from an engineering perspective, to deploy it, you know, in their networks and make everybody talk in a way that is stable and functional and making everyone happy. Whereas EIGRP, certainly, and I can't argue that it's deployed, because a lot of the folks I know that deploy it, again, going back to an enterprise case, it's easy to deploy. You can get it up and running without a whole lot of design, let's say. Not that you shouldn't, but you can make it go without a whole lot of design and without a whole lot of thought putting into it. And if you're a Cisco shop, which many networks certainly are, very Cisco oriented, it's easy to get it off the ground. So I think, you know, Donnie, the stats that you're saying, I think maybe do reflect a certain reality. But from, you know, a broader point of view, I think I'm speculating here that you might see EIGRP in islands, whereas OSPF is the global routing protocol that might be stitching an entire organization together. That's my interpretation.
I think what you're talking about is futures, right, versus current, right? Current, I don't think what you say bears out, right? We don't see customers with OSPF as their core deployment with EDGRP islands. In fact, if you're going to go that direction, what you see is a BGP core with EDGRP islands around it, much as they would do with OSPF BGP, right? So I think what you're saying is going forward in the future, right, if things don't change, then the industry may migrate toward OSPF simply because it's open. I agree, right? But we've changed that, right?
I was saying what I think is current just based on my some of my own personal experience and then interaction with other engineers. But I also think that there's going to be a lot of comments on this podcast, and we'll see what comes back from the community on this.
Oh, absolutely, right? Now, OSPF EDGRP is a religion, right? I mean, much like tabs and spaces, right? So you're going to find those that are going to be vehement that OSPF is the right answer. There should be no other answer. Then you're going to have the crowd that goes, no, you're crazy. EDGRP is so simple, so easy. And then they're going to counter with, yeah, okay, only dummies that can't design networks would deploy EdgeRP. I mean, I've seen all these arguments, right? The reality is that both protocols are good, both have their places in the network, and both have their strengths. What we tried to do by opening up EdgeRP is at least take one of those arguments off the table. Let's again look at it based on its merits. Look at it based on what's available to you to implement today and deploy today for your network today.
Well, let's steer the conversation back to OpenEIGRP again. And one of the, I think, more controversial elements of opening up EIGRP is that it's not a full Cisco spec. Within the Cisco EIGRP spec, if you're running it on a Cisco device, you have the opportunity to do stub routing, for example, which for scale, that's a pretty critical feature. You want to do stub routing to keep your query domain at a reasonable size and reduce your risk of stuck in active routes. But that's not there in OpenEIGRP. So why did Cisco, when opening up EIGRP, hold back on certain features?
So the only feature that we held back on was stub, right? If you look at the spec that we released, it is complete all EIGRP features, right? I mean, I hear people say stub, you know, we held back some features, plural, right? No, it's singular. The only thing we held back on was stub. Largely, right, we did this because, number one, marketing came in, looked at it, and said the largest deployment for hub and spoke these days is around DMVPN, right? EIGRP is not DMVPN. They're completely unrelated technologies. We're going to kind of look and see where DMVPN goes. If they decide to open, then it makes sense for us to open this as well. The other, if you will, justification, right, is we actually have some internal work going on right now around EIGRP peering and how it does neighbor formations and some enhancements. We'll be announcing it in Orlando at Cisco Live. It'll be part of my presentation. And what we don't want to do, you know, much like when we release a spec, we have to release the old classic packet formats and we have to talk about the new wide metric formats. We didn't really want to get into a position where we paint ourselves in a corner where maybe we have to support the old stub way and the new stub way. Now, you know, are we going to ultimately change that behavior? At this stage of the game, I don't really say, right? I mean, it's still in a bit of flux. But it was a bit of us saying, we've got some active development going on. Let's not force our hand on a particular decision. And then the other was, is that this is primarily today being used in conjunction with another technology that's Cisco proprietary. And it would really make more sense if we looked at both of them instead of one in and of itself.
I'll add to that, Ethan. One thing that Cisco did release was the SIA rewrite code that Donnie and myself and Don Slice and a bunch of other people worked on for years and years and years, which has as much impact or more on EIGRP stability as stub does. So while Cisco might be holding back on stub, you know, and right now I'm a non-Cisco person, so you can trust me, right? Anyway.
Very good.
Anyway, while Cisco held back on stub, you know, what I actually consider the more important piece of the EIGRP spec is the SIA rewrite because, I mean, I don't know, when I was in Cisco and we put out SIA rewrite, the number of SIA calls in the TAC went from however many to a quarter or a tenth of that within a matter of 6 months after that code was released. So, you know, there's some good things that have been released that, you know, I guess you could say Cisco didn't have to release those either, but they did. So there's at least some.
The SIA rewrite might have been harder not to release, but some of the technology that we clearly could not would have been, for example, graceful restart, right? So if you look at the way EIGRP works, in the olden days, EIGRP, when it formed a neighbor relationship, if that neighbor went down and came back up, you had to do a full database exchange. You had to go active on all of those routes. You completely disrupted the network, right? With the graceful restart work that we did, when an adjacency flaps and it comes back up, only those two adjacencies are involved in that disruption to the network, right? And providing no networks actually change, which usually it doesn't on a single flap, you don't involve the rest of the network in any kind of query processing, right? So that would have been a technology that really adds to EIGRP's scalability. We didn't have to release that. Right, we felt it was the right thing to do because it's not tied to any other technology. It's pure, you know, it's pure EIGRP, right? So I agree, right? Some people are going to come back and look at it kind of cross-eyed and say, well, you should have released this. Well, we're not done, right? As I tell people, this is step one, right? Cisco's taking it slow. They're taking a conservative approach to it. We're coming out with an informational. We're trying to figure out what our next steps is. Do we go consortium route? Do we go working group route? We need to make the right decision. We don't, you know, the one thing that Cisco is a little concerned about, and honestly, I'm a little concerned about too, is you open this up to the ATF. The ATF goes out and says, we can't have any competitive advantages. Let's completely redesign Edge or P totally, have a non-interoperable solution and call this the standard, right? So I think we're taking it slow. We're taking it a bit at a time. This isn't the end. It's beginning.
Now, you took this step here and opened it up, and what have there been other vendors that have come to you and said, we're going to do this, we're going to implement EIGRP ourselves in our equipment?
Yes.
Yeah.
So the couple things, right? Number one, we know of about five companies who are shipping EIGRP implementations today. All right. We're not really mentioning them by name. You can easily go out and do a Google search for, you know, for BEIGRP or basic EIGRP. And you'll find information on them, right? But we've not done full interop testing with them, so we're kind of playing it cautious. We don't want to come out and announce that company X has an EIGRP implementation, and then find out that maybe the implementation, you know, isn't quite up to snuff, and we wind up, you know, with a situation on our hands. But the answer is yes. There are about five companies that are shipping product. We've had that's outside the United States, primarily Asia and Europe, and then within the United States, we've had one large corporation that has approached us about joining in a consortium, right, and participating in that. And, you know, we're expecting, you know, this is all, I mean, we're only a couple of months down the road, right? So we're expecting other of the large vendors to also come in and join in with their implementation. The other thing is we've got one university that has approached us. They're actually in the process of doing I think their pronunciation is Quagma, a Quagma implementation of EIGRP. So it's very likely you'll see an open source implementation of EIGRP in the near future.
Obviously, then a good bit of reception from vendors and also the open source community that actually care about this, that Cisco's done this and are making steps to make it go.
Yeah, and I think the important point there, to me anyway, is that we've been so focused on link state protocols at a technology level for so long, we've almost lost track. You know, whenever I do a Cisco Live presentation, I always say, RIP. RIP, yes, that's something you put on your gravestone. That's not something you put in your network. But anyway, we've been so focused on the entire world of link state for so long that we've almost lost track from a technology perspective of distance vector and what it actually brings to network design and what you can do with it. And so, from my mind, you know, the good thing about Cisco doing this is all this interest is coming up, and it may spur some research. It may spur some more thinking about the balance, you know, between the two and what's good about distance vector and, you know, how we can make use of it in the right place in our network.
That's right. I agree, right? That was part of my motivation. I mean, I've been one of the proponents for opening up EIGRP. Some people accuse it of being my baby. Maybe it was, right? But I've definitely been one of the stronger vocal people within Cisco of pushing the fact that, you know, it's time. Let's open EIGRP up. Let's make it available for people to do more with than simply, you know, put in a Cisco product. So, clearly, right, getting it out there, getting it into the universities, letting them begin to do research. I think that's where we need to be from a technical perspective.
Donna, you'd mentioned earlier talking with vendors and saying, yep, we're not going to announce any vendors yet, but we are working with some different folks. And part of the reason Cisco's not going to announce vendors at this point would be, well, we'd want to validate that their solution is truly interoperable and then, you know, perhaps would make it public. Yep, so-and-so has done EIGRP and we've tested it and so on. Now, that implies to me that Cisco still has a tight involvement with what folks outside of the Cisco sphere might be doing with their EIGRP. I mean, are they – now,
no,
you've opened
no.
up the protocol, so explain what Cisco's role is as other vendors and maybe the open source community take this on.
We believe within Cisco that we will always have best of breed ERP implementation, right? But it is open now, right? It's out there. If a university picks it up and implements a feature that we don't have, right? It's just like with OSPF or ISIS. Another company can pick it up, implement a technology or a feature. That's very, very possible. I don't see an issue with that. From our perspective, the vendors that are shipping, there was no Cisco involvement in those products, or you know, we didn't go in and provide consultation or provide code or provide any technical guidance. There is some, you know, offer of involvement within the Quagma implementation. You know, and in fact, there was a post about BSD free BSD and people mulling over should we do an ERP implementation. I've reached out and said, you know, contact me. I'll be more than happy to come in and help you with any technical questions, anything I can do to promote this. So I think, you know, from the Cisco's hand in the pie perspective, right, we're not, right? We're kind of saying, look, here it is. If you want to implement it, here's the spec. If you got questions on the spec, contact us. We'll help the best we can, all under the umbrella of the IETF. And yes, it's an informational draft.
So another, how do we put this, cynical question, I guess, that's been out there is really, what's in it for Cisco? If they have opened up EAGRP, is this a revenue-driven proposition?
So, you know, so I'm not one of the bean counters at Cisco. I'm just one of the technologists, right? And honestly, one could argue that it's not a lot in it for Cisco. I mean, this could have been something that Cisco basically kept in its back pocket until, you know, the end of time, right? There's no strong driving force. I think what you see is you see people like myself, you see people like Chris Lee, who's the marketing PM, who came in and looked at it and said, you know, we're getting feedback from customers and our customers are telling us this is not cool. This is causing us problems. This is a headache for us. Please fix it. And so I think from Cisco's perspective, you know, and I'm sure people are going to look at me cross-eyed, but I think from the people that were involved in opening up the ERP, the motivation is our customers and trying to make life easier for our customers. You know, if this in turn, you know, means that, you know, vendor X comes in and implements EEGRP and comes in and competes with us, well, that's what free market's about, right? It's about coming out with the best solution. The other thing is, again, right, my belief is that Cisco has the capability, we have the knowledge, we have the experience to keep our implementation as best of breed. You know, if we don't, if we sit back and don't do anything with the EEGRP, then yeah, our vendors will come out and beat us. That's the market. But you know, so the long-winded way of saying is there's not any financial incentive for Cisco in doing this. I think it's just strictly people like myself and the other people involved who believe that from a technologist perspective, this is the right thing to do. And we took it to our management change and we presented the business cases. And you know what? They agreed. And so we've done it.
I agree with Donnie. I don't think there's a lot of business case behind Cisco doing this. There's a lot of, I mean, it makes sense in a business perspective from one perspective in that it takes the idea of EEGRP proprietary, not good, OSPF not proprietary, ISIS not proprietary, BGP not proprietary, all good, off the table. So I think it makes sense from Cisco's perspective in that way. On the other hand, you know, the risk to Cisco is that 60% market share that where EEGRP is deployed, and the risk that maybe somebody will come along and implement it and come in with a competitive bid, or an even greater risk, I think, than that is, hey, look, we have this brilliant new idea for EEGRP and Cisco can't keep themselves on top of it to actually implement it as fast as another vendor might. So I think that, you know, what Donnie's saying is Cisco has confidence in their ability to keep up technically. They have confidence in their equipment sales to be able to keep up against a competitor who tries to come to market with the EEGRP. So those risks, they've weighed the risk and they've decided that the overall good of the community overcomes the risk. And that's all to the good as far as I'm concerned.
Agreed.
So one other question here that I had was, we were talking offline regarding the fact that EEGRP could be used as a forwarding algorithm for more than just IP transport. Now, we think of, most of us that run EEGRP, we think of it for IPv4 and IPv6, and that's what it does. Now, back in the day, I used
not
it to
IPX?
Route... I used it to route IPX, and I want to say
Apple Talk.
Yeah.
Oh, and there's a new one out that's called we call it SAF.
So is that something that could reemerge? Because we see ISIS being used for things other than IP.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we'd been looking at is what else could EEDRP be used for, right? One of the projects I worked on just before the WideMetric work that I did was a technology called SAF, or Service Advertisement Framework. And it was a technology that was built upon EEDRP, right? But it carried non-routing information. Right. If you look at the way we use Call Manager and Call Manager Express, it actually carries dial plans around. So EEDRP, especially with the advent of the WideMetric work, we completely separated in EEDRP the concept of what you carry from how you carry. Right. So now you could actually implement V6 addresses on top of a V4 transport. You could actually completely do away with a V4, mm-hmm. V6 transport and go to, for example, a CLNS transport if you wanted to. You could mix. You could have V4 and V6 addresses all in the same topology being carried around by EEDRP. So EEDRP is extremely flexible in that respect that you know, independent of how you carry the information, and the information that you carry can all be segmented and all be happily coexist in the same thing that we call a topology.
Yeah, you can actually think of it as something like the appy-sappy work in BGP, the ability to have multiple service addresses and different address families that you can use with BGP. It's very similar to the way EEDRP does the appy-sappy work there.
Yeah, EEDRP carries a number of things, right? It carries the AFI-SAFI, right? So that'll tell you the AFI, you know, we actually in EEDRP use the IANA definitions, right? So you can actually decode off an IPv4 address versus V6 address. You can also decode off whether you're a multicast or unicast topology. The other thing that we added into there was this thing called a VRID, virtual router ID. And in addition to that, we actually have a TID, a topology identifier. So you can actually carry VLAN IDs inside of EEDRP and associate a V4 or V6 or some other AFI-SAFI against a specific VLAN ID, right? So we've kind of layered the protocol definition in ways that going forward, it's very extensible and very easy to carry non-traditional routing things in addition to your routing stuff. And I think that's, you know, honestly, I was always kind of jealous that BGP could carry all of this other stuff around. And so we kind of borrowed some of the BGP ideas when we were evolving EEDRP so that EEDRP can do some of the same types of stuff.
That last little section there that you described, it really sounds like it lends itself to virtualized environments that are multi-tenant, securely separated, and so on. And if I had to guess, maybe you are not familiar with this, but does 1PK allow for someone to remotely settle those things within EEDRP to automate deployment for like a IaaS deployment, something like that?
So I'll be careful what I talk about future development, but I will say that yes, there is active work going on with looking at 1PK integration within EEDRP and what information that we provide available through 1PK APIs, right? So going forward, you are going to see, at least my belief is, that you are going to see a 1PK development kit that allows you to interact with EEDRP information, EEDRP topology information, and you know, I'd be kind of excited for customers who hear this and are interested in that to get in touch with me and say these are the kinds of things that I would love to have through 1PK to be able to do with EEDRP, so that we can make sure they're included in the development kit.
Well, that is pretty cool information, and I think that is a good place for us to stop the podcast today. So, Donnie and Russ, thanks both of you for taking the time to chat. It's scheduling is the single hardest part of this job as a podcast host. I will tell you that. So, getting you guys on the phone has been great. And Russ, why don't you give the listeners how they can follow you on the internet, read your stuff, and maybe what you'll be up to this week.
Okay. Well, this week I am working on non-work stuff for various reasons, primarily because I'm looking for a job. But anyway, other than that, I have been accused of the crime of working remotely. So there you go. Other than that, you can follow me on Packet Pushers, and I've been setting up a Twitter account. It's Routing Geek RTG. GK, and I've been trying to keep that updated. I'm not much of a big Twitter guy, but, you know, there it is. Denise Donahue convinced me to do it, so I'm set up on Twitter now. I haven't really been doing a lot with it. And I'm also working on the network management chapter for this new book I'm working on, The Art of Network Architecture, and getting my Cisco Live presentations together. So hopefully I'll see everybody at Cisco Live if we don't chat on the phone between now and then. And you'll be sitting in all my sessions going, ooh, ah, giving me fives. I really love those fives. And, you know, just chattering there and stuff. So I'll be around.
The Art of Network Architecture. Why do I feel like that's going to show up on the CCDE reading list in the not-too-distant future? Oh, boy. And Donnie, same thing with you. How can folks contact you if they would like, follow you on the internet, that kind of thing, and any cool projects you're working on over this week?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you can follow me on Twitter. It sounds like my initials, but it's spelled different. I'll spell it for the sake. It's D-I-I-V-I-O-U-S. That's pronounced Devious, which happens to be my initials, D-V-S. You can also get me on LinkedIn by the same name. In terms of projects, I mean, goodness, I've got four sessions that I'm working on for Cisco Live, OSPF and EEDRP, obviously. There's going to be a couple of them. We'll have an in-depth protocol session there. So if you really want to know more about packet formats and definitions, come to Cisco Live, attend the EEDRP and in-depth look at the protocol. Other than that, I've got a couple of road trips planned to interact with customers. I've got a number of presentations and sessions that we'll be doing both in the continental United States and outside the United States. So Cisco is definitely keeping me busy these days.
Great to hear it. Again, thank you guys for coming on. And, of course, I'm at EC Banks on Twitter, and I do most of my blogging at packetpushers.net, but you can also find me on Network Computing and other publications. I'm actually working on a project for Network World right now regarding SDN. By the time this comes out, I'll be either at or will have just finished a speaking engagement for Modern Infrastructure, a Tech Target program in New York City held in April, and I will be speaking at Interop in May about chopping down the fat tree in the small data center. I got a one-hour presentation there. And to keep up with the show, packetpushers.net is home base for us. That's where our RSS feeds are. That's where all the new content we generate is published. If you'd like to send us an email about this show, packetpushers@gmail.com. We respond to all mail, although we don't promise to do it immediately. We have a forum, forum.packetpushers.net, where you can engage in conversation that is longer than 140 characters per quote, and have intelligent discourse with fellow network engineers from around the world. And those of you that had noticed the spam volume was climbing, we are battling it. We've got out our flamethrowers and battle axes and doing our darndest to get the spammers and keep them at bay, which has been kind of a pain in the butt. But we're aware of it, and we are dealing with that challenge. And, of course, Twitter, @PacketPushers. And remember that too much networking would never be enough.